What's going on, guys? It's JP from the Double Double, and I'm here with my co-host, Ben.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome.
And today we're going to share our thoughts about the trade deadline and a few other things near the end. But we're going to start with the trade deadline. Both of us haven't really had the opportunity to talk to each other about our reactions to some of the trades that were made at the deadline. So we're both going to figure out what our thoughts are on all of the trades today on pod, which is really fun. We're going to start off with one that I think probably has the most impact throughout the league. And this is Bojan Bogdanović and Alec Burks traded to the Knicks for Quentin Grimes, Malachi Flynn, Evan Fournier, Ryan Arcidiacono, and 2 second round picks. What was your reaction to the Knicks making this trade?
I think, first of all, the amount that the Knicks were able to improve without giving up a first round pick is so impressive. Bojan Bogdanović, I am not a truther that this is a guy who's going to come in and make a gigantic difference on this team. I think it's great when Julius Randle's missing time to get another forward who's legit, who can score on his own. But thinking about where he falls in the playoff rotation, he's like 7th or 8th, probably. And it's good to have a 7th or 8th man who can be a scorer at that level. I'm not sure how big of a needle mover this is, but the depth on the Knicks is now just insane. They have competent basketball players all the way down at all positions, basically.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's probably the most important move that was made at the deadline, because the Knicks went from kind of a top-heavy team with that starting five to now they're, what, eight or nine deep with this trade. That makes them a very good team. And while OG Anunoby is out with surgery for his elbow and Randall's coming back from a dislocated shoulder, to get a guy who we know can score 20 points per game because he's done it for the Pistons this season, that is supremely helpful for a guy like Jalen Brunson, who's just been getting double teamed every single game since both of those guys got hurt. So I was a big fan of this. And when it just came down to, you know, playoff rotations and playoff matchups and stuff like that, I always think it's nice to have two more 40% three-point shooters added to your team with Burks and Bogdanović. I just think that gives the Knicks a little bit more lineup versatility. I think the Knicks are very, very good.
I think they are too, man. Thinking about just the starting lineup for the Knicks, Julius Randle and Josh Hart are definitely not spacers. Their centers, they don't really have a center that can space the floor, so you definitely needed to add depth that could shoot. Yeah. Alec Burks, I mean, we've had some awful nightmare moments from him to start the season on the Pistons, but he really kind of picked his shit up. He had some really good games before he was traded. Quentin Grimes, losing him, honestly, I thought it was going to be a bigger deal. He didn't make the kind of leap that a lot of people were expecting from him this season. I think he'll be good in another situation, but it's not a big loss getting rid of him.
Yeah, no, it's really not. And I think a lot of Knicks fans were pretty disappointed in his development. And I think a lot of Knicks fans were angry at Tibbs for not giving him more opportunity. We heard Quentin Grimes come out in the media earlier this year and say, basically, I've just been reduced to either shoot a corner three or pass the ball up. And we've seen more than that from Quentin Grimes in the past. So I'm kind of glad he was shipped just to see if there's a little bit more in him as a basketball player. And we'll get the opportunity to see that with him on the Pistons, because we know they need as much talent as possible.
I saw people talking about this a little bit, and I kind of wanted to bring it up on the pod just to think about that series between the Hawks and the Knicks a couple years ago. Thinking about how those teams have improved since then, the Knicks have become incredible. They have added so much depth. They've added a second co-star who's worth his shit, Jalen Brunson. Thinking about just... yeah, I know it's kind of off topic, but just what the Hawks have been able to do compared to the Knicks, they've done nothing. They've gone nowhere. They've maybe gone backwards. It's kind of awesome how much the Knicks have been able to improve this team.
The way the franchise was run for the last 25 years was horrible. Like, it was incompetence everywhere. We saw many examples of it. And then since Leon Rose got hired, they signed Jalen Brunson, who's become an all-NBA level player. They traded for OG Anunoby, which was a massive trade. They've revamped Julius Randle's career, and now they go and make this trade to bring them more depth without wasting any of their first-round picks, which still allows them to go pursue a high-level star to add to this team. I'm not sure how you can do a better job. And for a Knicks, you know, fan base that's been waiting for ever for a shot at a championship. I texted you the day this happened. I think the Knicks are a Porzingis injury away from legitimately maybe being able to put their foot in the finals, right? I mean, I think they're good enough to challenge the Bucks.
I think they're good enough to challenge the Bucks too, man. Really, the only thing the Knicks got rid of was all of their young talent. They traded in every young piece they had for a guy they knew could help them win right now. Yeah. And honestly, I love that move. RJ Barrett probably was never going to fit this team as well as OG does. The way that OG is able to work off ball, the defense that he brings, this was a perfect trade. Quentin Grimes, I said before, I really like him as a player. I think I'll like him more in a new situation. I think bringing in some guys who can help the Knicks win now is a great thing. I agree, man. I think, you know, the Bucks are not a team you can be dead confident in a long series. I think Doc Rivers is a bit iffy of a coach in that way. I trust the Knicks. If it goes to a long series, I trust the Knicks to be able to pull it out.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is not something you could say in the past.
No.
This team has an identity that I talked about on our TikTok live a little bit a few days ago. I think a lot of people directly correlate the word size with length in the NBA. When we talk about size, we always think, all right, they must be 7 foot. The Knicks are huge, but it's strength. Like, OG Anunoby is built like a linebacker. He can guard 1 through 5 legitimately. Julius Randle is a beefcake. That dude is super strong. Mitch Robinson, same thing. Even Jalen Brunson, who's short in stature, because he's like kind of thick and wide, like he can guard up for a little bit just because he's heavy. This team can punish you physically over the course of a 7-game series. And when we think about potential opponents in these series, right, like Jason Tatum, he will be taking bumps from OG Anunoby and Julius Randle and these guys who can actually body him. Or if you go to the Bucks building a wall for Giannis, I think this is the team that's built to do it best. So they have these weird matchups that they actually have some advantages in heading into the playoffs. And I'm just super impressed by their organization and now they've been running operations there.
I think, I mean, kind of a side note, but the fact that they were able to turn Evan Fournier's $17 million into a legitimately productive bench piece,
yeah,
that, like, so much credit. You have to give them so much credit for that. There's so many guys here. DiVincenzo is a guy that I don't think gets nearly enough love. He's shooting 42% from 3 on 7 attempts, 14 points a game. He's had some killer games from them, especially with Randle missing. It does feel like, you know, defensively, they've got the energy and the size to muscle up anybody. And then offensively, again, they've got the energy and they kind of play well in a way where they could scratch out a game against anybody, man. The Celtics, if that's the Eastern Conference Finals, talk about a fun-ass series, man.
I agree. And I think, you know, there are both reasons why both teams will play well in that series. I think if we're looking for a potential reason to upset, it would be the Knicks' physicality, right? On just how they could guard Jaylen Brown over the course of a series or how they could guard Jason Tatum over the course of the series, which I don't think other teams in the East could match the level of physicality that the Knicks could bring to that series. But another big trade happened for another team, for the Oklahoma City Thunder. They got Gordon Hayward from the Charlotte Hornets, and the Hornets in return got Trey Mann, Davis Bertans, Vasily Micic, and draft compensation. I believe it was 2 second-round picks. What are your thoughts on the addition to Gordon Hayward joining the OKC Thunder? Does anything stand out for you there?
It's interesting, man, because Gordon Hayward is absolutely washed. He is not as good as he was in like 2018 or 2019 or anything like that. But he is definitely better at shooting than Josh Giddey. He's a more connective piece than a lot of the forwards that they have. You know, Vasily Micic, he was really good in EuroLeague. This is his first year in the NBA. You know, he might be a player. But thinking about the guys that they were subbing out there when Jalen Williams was sitting, it's like Aaron Wiggins, Kenrich Williams, Usman Jang. You're telling me Gordon Hayward's worse than those guys? No. So it's a great trade. They traded a dog shit contract to Davis Bertans for value and sent away Trey Mann at the same time. I think it's great for the Thunder, but I don't think it's like a massive needle mover. It is an improvement, though.
And I think that's fair. I do think it's a pretty big upgrade over Josh Giddey. because they're starting to guard Giddy like Ben Simmons again, where they're just sitting in the paint while he's in the corner. And you can't do that to Gordon Hayward. You just can't. And, you know, when they first made the trade, I thought, okay, this is a guy that's going to come off the bench when Jalen Williams needs a rest. I'm starting to think maybe they just put Gordon Hayward in the starting lineup over Giddy. I'm not sure. I think at this point of their careers, Gordon Hayward is just the better player. I'm not sure there's a conversation, actually. I know some of the things Giddy can do passing the ball is really special, but the three-point shooting, the mid-range shooting that Gordon provides, Gordon's still a pretty good playmaker, obviously not up to Giddy's caliber, but I don't know. Like, maybe he is a starter on a team that's trying to make it to the finals. I don't think they will, but they're trying to. So this is kind of a big deal, even though it's a player that we've kind of forgotten about or stopped caring fully about.
Yeah, he's a guy who, since he's been an all-star, has averaged probably like 14 points, 15 points. So, you know, adding that guy to your rotation's great. And they traded a guy they weren't playing in Trey Mann and Davis Bertans. So getting rid of two contracts of guys you're not playing to bring in a plus wing who is a little old, but who cares? I like it. I think he is better than Josh Giddey for what they need. Right. Because he's a great connective playmaker. He always has been. And he can hit a wide open three-point shot. He's only taking two a game this season. But I think that's kind of a part of the weirdness going on in Charlotte. They've lacked direction. They've lacked, you know, any sort of desire to do anything. Brandon Miller's definitely revived that. But, like, getting Gordon Hayward out of Charlotte, I think, is great. And I think he'll be a plus player for the Thunder.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest winners of the deadline are the Hornets. I think they come only second to the Knicks for who operated the best at the deadline. And just focusing on this deal, we'll talk more about the Hornets later, but just focusing on this deal, Trey Mann, I think as a player, me and you both liked coming out of the draft, but there's just no room for him on that OKC roster. Like, there's just way too many players that are better than him. In Charlotte, he will have a chance to explore and grow as a player. I think that's important. And this Micić guy, same thing. Like, he's a good basketball player. It's just there's so many of them in OKC that he is expendable, and his contract was perfect for trading. So, you know, the Hornets gave up a guy whose deal is expiring for two guys that are gonna play minutes for them. That's a win in my eyes. And I think for Oklahoma City Thunder, too, like, this is a win for them as well, kind of pre-agency, where they bring in a guy whose contract is expiring. If they like the way he fits, they can bring him back on a cheap deal. If they don't, they can say bye-bye and try again with a different free agent. So I think it's a win-win trade for both of these teams.
I agree. These guys are going to get minutes. Micić, in his first game for the Hornets, had his career-high 18 points, really efficient. These are legit basketball players, man. They just kind of struggled to find a real role on the Thunder. I think, you know, sending them to Charlotte is a great thing. We can kind of keep talking about Charlotte because they traded away PJ Washington and they brought in Grant Williams. Yeah. And I like it for both sides. I think trading a first round pick if you're Dallas was a mistake, but I do think the player swap fits both teams better. What do you think about that trade?
I think this was a slam dunk for Charlotte. Like, this is a A++ trade for them. PJ Washington gets traded for Grant Williams, Seth Curry, and a first round pick that's only top two protected. Right? So this is in 2027. That's 3 years from now. If Luka's teams continue to play at this rate, I think he's gone. So basically, if you're Charlotte, you're thinking, hopefully they don't build a contender over there in Dallas, because we'll get a very valuable first round pick. And hopefully Brandon Miller is a all NBA caliber guy by then. And LaMelo Ball finally figures out his ankle injuries, right? There's a trick you can play on yourself to tell you, like, in 2027 as a Charlotte fan, that could be a very important year. In terms of just player swap, I do think PJ Washington's actually a very nice fit in Dallas. We talk about the players that play next to Luka. We've had this conversation a lot on this podcast. This is a guy who's fine backdoor cutting, who's fine taking catch and shoot threes. And I think his athleticism is a little bit more important than what Grant did on defense. I think having PJ as an alley-oop partner is going to really help Luka kind of grow even more as an offensive player and just boost that offensive potential for that team in a way that Grant couldn't. So I like the trade for him, but I think giving up a first round pick for a guy that's a bench guy is kind of fucking crazy. And I think Grant Williams is basically just as good as PJ Washington. I just think that his role in Dallas being shrunk down to catch and shoot threes in the corner and nothing else, how is he supposed to be a good basketball player? He already had a great game for Charlotte. I think it was last night. The Charlotte Hornets have won two straight games since the trade deadline. It's like Seth Curry and Grant Williams, same thing we said for the Gordon Hayward trade. These guys are going to play minutes for the Charlotte Hornets. So instantly, Charlotte is more respectable in a weird way. I think it's an A++ for Charlotte, and I think it's like a B for the Mavs. Like, I think it's fine.
I think in terms of player swap, PJ Washington fits the Mavs better. I think he's slightly better as a creator than Grant is, and he can also do the stuff Grant can, just sit in a corner and shoot threes, play good defense. I think all the things you said about his athleticism are right, too. From the Dallas end, I've been hearing some conversation, and I kind of wanted to bring it up on the podcast, about Mark Cuban and some levels of fuckery going on with him, where he's trading a 2027 pick. He's done a pick swap in 2030. He's done a first-round pick in 2029. What is the plan? Why are we hemorrhaging our future to bring in these, like, slight improvements? I don't really understand it.
It's because how else do you build around Luka? I honestly think that Luka's play style is so difficult to build around that if you see a player that you think can work, you have to go get them, because another star, sorry, I just dropped my chapstick for the people who heard that, but to go get another star, it's not guaranteed that they come in and play the same exact way and it works perfectly because of his unique play style. So I think Mark Cuban, in his weird way, was like, all right, we'll just get role players who have potential to pop but fit next to Luka. I think you've said this for years, and again, I thought about this during the trade deadline. We haven't had time to speak about it privately, but you nailed it. This is LeBron early Cavs all over again. Like, Luka will leave to go join his version of the Miami Heat because Dallas cannot fucking figure this shit out. And I give more blame to Luka than I do to anyone, right? Because he had Jalen Brunson on his team. He had Porzingis on his team. Like, there has been talent there that hasn't been able to grow because of his play style. But I also think the way Mark Cuban's just hemorrhaging picks left and right for guys that I don't think are, like, serious difference makers in a playoff series, both of them are at fault. I think, yeah, it's some weird shit going on in Dallas.
The conversation I've been hearing, and obviously this is rumors and conspiracy, is about whether or not Mark Cuban's going to be out the door pretty soon. Whether or not these are sort of the moves that you make when you know you're not going to be around to experience the consequences. So who knows if there's any truth to that, but, like, you know, there's a world where this shit doesn't work. Luka Doncic is unhappy. Luka gets traded. And then, yeah, maybe he doesn't stick around. I do think taking some steps to improve the team is important. Obviously, the thing about Jalen Brunson, man, they didn't want to lose him. Luka did not want to get rid of him. They didn't pay him as much as the Knicks were paying him.
But they had a chance to extend him, and they declined the chance to extend him.
Do we blame Luka Doncic for that?
No, that's but we also know that Jalen Brunson didn't reach his full potential in Dallas because of Luka's play style. Like, Brunson needed the ball more and he didn't get it. He goes to New York and now he's an all-NBA caliber player. Like, that would never have happened if he stayed in Dallas. If they re-signed him, he would have just been a cool sixth man of the year.
Maybe. I mean, I think that's, you know, I think he still would have been a great fit for this team, and I think they very much wanted to hold on to him. Maybe Luka wanted to hold on to him. I'm not sure about the Mavs front office. But you're right, man. Jalen Brunson would not have had the opportunity to become this guy if he was a second option under Luka.
Yeah, he would have been Manu Ginobili for them, which is still a very good player, but he's going to make an all-NBA team now. Like, he's one of the better players in the entire league. That never happens if he stays in Dallas. It's a shit show. I don't know. They've looked good since the trade deadline, but there's just some weird moves that they've made.
Before we move off of them, I want to talk about their other move that I think is a much bigger one, bringing in Daniel Gafford. As much as we love Derek Lively on this podcast, he is still a rookie. Daniel Gafford is an awesome center, probably, you know, one of the better than average. I'll say that. Maybe he's like top 10, top 15 centers in the league. Yeah. I love the energy he brings. I loved watching him his first two games with this team. I just think this is an awesome, awesome center to put on your team.
I think it's really smart. I think he's a very good rim protector. He's obviously a great finisher around the rim. And I think having versatility at the big man spot is super important for this Dallas team, whose defense struggles at time, right? Derek Lively has far superseded what a lot of people thought he could do in his rookie year. He's been a great rim protector and a great alley-oop catcher, and he's done that about as well as you possibly could. Now you're just adding some insurance with Gafford. Like, Gafford does a very similar thing, except now all 48 minutes of the game, you will have a center that can protect the rim and catch oops for whoever's throwing lobs to them or whoever's playing defense in front of them, right? Whether that's Kyrie or Luka, they will have a guy protecting the back line.
Yeah, Derek Lively and Daniel Gafford as your two centers, so much better than Maxi Kleba and Dwight Powell. If you're a guy like Luka who wants targets to throw lobs to. I think it's an awesome trade. I do think that is the kind of difference maker that may help the Mavs stay a bit more relevant. They were definitely struggling. I think they've won five straight. The additions that they've had, you know, does it make them title contenders? No. But it definitely makes them a better team than they were before they made the trades.
Yeah, I totally agree. And actually, it's funny, now that you mention it, all these moves that Cuban's making, I heard an argument that what he's doing is preparing the team to operate within the new CBA, where it's two stars and everyone else. And they already have their quote-unquote elite role players on the roster. They don't need to go get them. They don't need to pay extra to go bring them onto their team because they did it before they even hit, and they have them under contract. I don't know. If you think this team's a championship caliber team heading into the new CBA with all the contract restrictions and stuff, that's fine. I'm not so sure I agree, but it's an interesting way to think about the problem I think they're running into, which is not a lot of draft capital and not a lot of cohesion, I guess, in the roster. So,
yeah, we've kind of talked about what the new CBA is going to lead to, and it is kind of situations like Dallas. You know, maybe Kyrie doesn't stick around, and maybe it's just Luka and a bunch of dudes. Maybe that's kind of what the CBA is leading teams towards. I think that's
possible. They can afford. They can afford two max players and their entire roster. Like, they won't even touch the tax. They'll be under the tax, and they'll have what we assume is a pretty good team.
Mm.
It's the three stars that absolutely murders everything.
Right.
And they're avoiding that by bringing in plus role players. But it's just, does that get you in championship talks when there's guys in the league like Jokic and stuff? That's the issue. So I don't know. It's an interesting thing. Dallas definitely was active at the trade deadline. I'm glad they were. I want to talk about a trade that wasn't made. And this is DeJounte Murray. We heard a ton about DeJounte Murray to the Lakers. What were your overall thoughts on him not being shipped out in general? Like, do you think that was a wise move, or do you think they're kind of missing the boat on his value here?
The rumor mill in Atlanta has been going for so long. Like, I see conversations on both sides. I've seen conversations about we need to get rid of DeJounte Murray and bring in some, you know, maybe a guard who fits Trey a little better, maybe a center, because Clint Capella is kind of on his way out. But then I've also heard the side of, what if the Hawks stick with DeJounte Murray? What if they ship out Trae Young next year? They're not in a position where they can do nothing. They have to make some sort of decision. They have to go in some sort of direction. Obviously, this double guard pairing isn't working. Do you think there's any reality where DeJounte stays and Trae Young is the one that gets shipped?
I do. I really do. Which is so weird. But I think it gives them an opportunity to kind of retool on the fly and not completely bottom out. You know, I think Trae Young's value to this team is underrated. I think he's kind of the only thing that's keeping them afloat to begin with. But if you're able to keep DeJounte Murray, you know, does he take a step up then being the lead ball handler, and you're not like the worst team in the East after you trade Trae Young? I don't know. But I think this summer for them, depending on what they do in the play-in, because they still are in the 10th spot, right? So if they win both play-in games and they make a playoff series, there's a chance they talk themselves into running it back, which is crazy, but there's a chance that happens. But if they just flame out immediately or even miss the play-in altogether, like, I think there's a chance Trae Young is available in the summer. And we're talking about some of these teams that can go trade for a star. Obviously, the Knicks aren't going to do it because they have Jalen Brunson already. But we've talked a lot about the Lakers. And I brought this up, I think, last pod, the possibility of Trae Young joining the Lakers. And I think that would be a major move in terms of just like pop culture and championship contendership. So I don't know. It's great. That shocked me. He wasn't moved, but it kind of opens my mind up to more crazy possibilities for the summer.
Yeah, man. I'm looking through right now at the money that they have sent out for the next couple of years. And next year, everybody is still under contract. So you're right about the fact that if there is some sort of weird success that they run into, maybe they do convince themselves to run it back. Yeah. DeJounte Murray and Trae Young are the ones locked up long term. DeJounte's got 4 years on his deal after this. Trae has three. So, yeah. You know, we know this pairing doesn't work, right? We're done yep. kind of seeing if it can figure itself out. One of these guys has to go. Genuinely, if Trae Young is on a team other than the Spurs, like if he's not next to Wemby, I don't think I'm a believer. Maybe Anthony Davis is the same flavor of player. But just like an unbelievable rim protector is what you need if you're going to, you know, help Trae Young through his weaknesses.
Yeah, and I am of the belief that if he does go to the Lakers, that instantly propels them to a championship level team. That's my belief. But I understand what you're saying, and it's something Atlanta has struggled with, building around Trae Young and what players fit him the best, right? And you know, we talk a lot about Luka and team building in that team. It's a very similar issue in Atlanta, where you have this 5'11" dynamo who's a top five offense by himself, but like some of the other stuff is just hard to game plan for. Like, it's a really interesting problem to have. But if you're the Lakers, you bet on that talent, right? You just do. A guy that can shoot from 30 feet at 36 to 37%, and a guy who's like seriously a top five playmaker in the entire league, you just have to bet on that guy. He brings you closer to a championship. So I think if you're Atlanta, right, from Atlanta's point of view, you can get more in return for Trae Young than you ever could for DeJounte Murray. I think DeJounte Murray maybe fetches you one first-round pick and a quality player. I'm thinking Trae Young can get you up to three with a quality player, three first-round picks. That is, if you're thinking of like a retooling or a rebuild, the more picks, the better. I would highly consider trading one of the two guards in the summertime if you're the Atlanta Hawks.
What does the LeBron James equation or part of this equation look like? He's got a player option for this deal for this next season. I think it's unlikely he takes it. What do you think is going to happen with that?
I think LeBron James is retiring a Los Angeles Laker. So I don't think he's not going to go to fucking Philadelphia to go win a title. He's just not going. I think Golden these conversations. No. To clash legacies with Curry, like there's just too many levels to it. This guy's staying in Los Angeles to finish off his career. And I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure that Trae Young is actually a clutch client, which is obviously LeBron James sports agency. So there's already some mob ties there to come bring him in. I'm really intrigued by that. I hope that happens for both the Hawks' sake, because I do think they need kind of a fresh start here. And also for Trae Young, who I'd like to see playoff basketball again. So, the DeJounte Murray not being moved is kind of a domino falling into what I think could be a much bigger picture in the summertime.
Yes, they can't be just the Chicago Bulls of their division, where they just don't make trades and they continue to kind of teeter. That would be awful for Trae Young. That would be awful right. for the Hawks. I want to talk about a trade that I probably went too hard in saying it won't happen. I said that Joel Embiid, the Sixers were lying about Joel Embiid's injury so they could save face and, you know, sell more tickets because they know he's not coming back. But they went and made a trade that suggests to me that he's coming back, that they expect him for this year's playoff run. Bringing in Buddy Hield to this team is awesome. Awesome. I don't care much for campaign. He's just a dude, but Buddy Hield is a shooter next to Embiid. That's going to be so great when he finally comes back.
Yeah, he's already played really, really well for them. It kind of seems like he hasn't missed a step to begin with. Oh, here we go. The trade details are here. Yeah, Buddy Hield to the Sixers is a big, big deal. And, you know, Joel coming back and having that level of shooter, joining the team for what I think is kind of scraps, is kind of a huge deal. Marcus Morris, that contract was super easy to trade. Indiana waived him immediately. Buddy Hield is a very, very good fit on that 76ers team.
Yeah, he is. I mean, it's so underrated. He is so underrated as a three-point guy. I'm trying to look up right now just how many three-pointers he's made. He's 10th all-time in three-pointers made. yeah. Outside of Steph Curry, I think he's second in the NBA in, like, total threes made.
Yeah.
This is an unbelievable trade. What do you think about it from the Indiana side? Just the fact that they kind of just got worse for free.
Yeah, it's the second round picks that they got. They can help in trades in the future for periphery pieces, but Buddy Hield was asking for a new contract coming up. And I think if you're Indiana and you have Aaron Nesmith and Ben Mathurin on your team, I think you try to convince yourself that Aaron Nesmith is like 85% of Buddy Hield. You know, I think Nesmith's already a way better defensive player, like way better.
Yeah.
It's just, can he ever reach that level of 3-point shooting? Honestly, the answer is probably no.
No.
But if you're Indiana and you ask yourself, can he become 80 to 85% of what Buddy Hield is? I think you can convince yourself, yeah. So I think having the younger player on a cheaper deal, not having to pay Nesmith a massive amount of money this upcoming summer, I think that kind of lends itself to why they traded Hield.
I think that makes sense. I definitely think that makes sense. Buddy Hield was definitely a great fit on that team. He's a guy who fits perfect on any team. He is, you know, everybody wants a guy who can shoot 40% on 9 threes a game. Everybody right. wants that guy. What is it going to look like when Joel Embiid comes back is what I'm most interested in. And I guess as a side note to that, like, when is he coming back? Do we right. think that, like, he'll be back, he'll reach the 40 game mark even before the season ends?
Honestly, probably not. And you mentioned that on the last pod, and I thought your observation of, you know, hey, if they actually make a move here at the deadline, that's a pretty good sign for Philadelphia fans, meaning you're probably getting Joel Embiid back. I'm going to go ahead and say they get him back at game like 75. Like, I think they get him back the last 2 weeks of the season. It's a ramp up period. He's going to head into the first series of the playoffs limping, like hypothetically, right? Like just kind of getting his knees under him. And then they're going to see if they can go and make a run and see if he can continue a special season that he was having. I think Buddy Hield is a caliber of talent that would help him do that, you know, make a run. That's a guy that can explode for 15 points in 5 minutes. You know what I mean? So I don't know. It's really in big picture for Philly. I love the move because I think they're going to re-sign him. And short picture, I love it because it makes them more of a contender this year. But what that means for Joel and the whole team's success this season, I'm still kind of confused on.
What I think it does for me is it locks the Sixers into that 5 seed. I don't think okay. this is a move that without Joel Embiid, I don't think there's a chance that they pass the Knicks or the Bucks or the Cavs. But yeah. I think this is a move that kind of helps them maintain a maybe slightly higher than 500 record without Joel Embiid. I think it keeps them above the Magic. It keeps them above the Pacers and the Heat. Which is maybe what they needed to be doing. They needed to tread water so that when Joel Embiid comes back, they can continue to be a force. You know, right. if you're putting them against the Knicks in a first round series, that's going to be a fun ass series, man. I don't know how to call which way that's going to go. It's going to depend on Joel Embiid's health. Right. But that'll be an entertaining ass series.
And in terms of what Buddy Hield has done for the Sixers since he's gotten there, he's averaging 22 points per game on 52% from the floor and 45% from three. I don't know if you could ask for a better start from a player.
No.
And just thinking about him running around Joel Embiid's screens to get open looks, he's gonna bring another wrinkle to this team that they desperately needed. That is a sneaky big deal at the trade deadline for sure.
Here's another deal that people are kind of putting a lot of weight in. I'm not sure if we feel the same way. Royce O'Neal joining the Suns. Is this a needle mover or does this not matter at all?
This means nothing to me at all. This is one I want to send back your way, because I thought this was kind of important. Detroit sending Monty Morris to the Minnesota Timberwolves in return for Shake Milton, Troy Brown Jr., and 1 second round pick. Me personally, the last time I came on this podcast, I said if the Wolves got Tyus Jones Jr., that would be a move that could potentially move them into championship caliber teams because he takes care of the ball so much, and that's their biggest issue as a team. Monte Morris is basically Tyus Jones' baby version, like just less good. So it's still in the same ilk. Like they're trying to bring in a guy who can run an offense effectively and responsibly and keep people in the right spots. So I was a big fan of the move. I'm just curious, do you think he's a good enough player to kind of fix that issue for them?
So his assist to turnover ratio kind of paints him as a guy who's good at managing offense, that good at, you know, keeping the ball under control. But what it seems like to me is he's a guy who shoots. And the reason he's not turning the ball over is because he's not passing. He's just taking the shot. Tyus Jones would definitely be a great ball mover and help get everyone else involved. You're bringing Monte Morris onto the team because there's occasional games that he can pop off for 18 or 20 points. And this offense needs that. But I don't see him as like a facilitator, like a guy keeping the offense running.
That's fair. I think you may be underrating that a little bit. I think he'll probably be able to provide some more of that than anticipated. Obviously, I think Tyus Jones was the home run swing for them. Mm. I think that could have really, really kind of moved the needle for them. But I'm looking at his probably best season, which was 2022 in Washington when Porzingis was there and Kyle Kuzma was there. 5 assists to 1 turnover a game.
Yeah.
I think that assist to turnover ratio lets you know that I am good enough to kind of run things. That's a pretty rare turnover ratio to hit. So we'll see. We'll see how well he can play for them. Let's see if that impacts their fourth quarter offense at all, because that's been a real weakness of Minnesota.
I think his better year might even be the year before it, playing for Denver. 13 points, 4.5 assists, again to 1 turnover. He is absolutely a guy who can not turn the ball over, manage the ball pretty well. I think that is true. But I think he is more inclined to shoot the ball than he is to pass the ball. But honestly, the Timberwolves do need a guy who can do that effectively.
Yeah. I mean, I think in terms of skill set and what he brings to that team, it's exactly what they need to kind of cover their weaknesses. I just think Tyus Jones could have done it a little bit better.
Because he would be taking less shots and he'd be facilitating more.
Right.
Right.
Right. Very similar to what Mike Conley already does for them.
Right.
So there's one more move that I want to talk about, and then I think that kind of covers the entire trade deadline. This one's a tiny one, but it involves your team. Xavier Tillman to the Boston Celtics. Super small deal, but just like as a fan of your team making that move, what did you think?
I think he's going to be a better third string big man than Luke Kornet or Nemeas Kenta. He is a guy who can space the floor a little bit, not really, but like, his offense is passable. His defense is great. And on a team like the Celtics, if you're coming in as a third string big, we definitely need the defensive versatility to be there. I trust him in that sense, but like, is he a guy that even plays a playoff game? I don't know.
That's a good question. I think he's important just in terms of flexibility, right? Me and you have been talking all year long about Porzingis' knees, right? And I think if he goes down now, or if Horford needs a rest or something, you have like a legitimate guy that you can trust in a fourth quarter of a playoff game in Tillman. He did it last year for the Grizzlies. I know the Celtics are a step up, obviously, but you know, if one of your guys goes down, you can kind of take a deep breath when Xavier Tillman comes into the game. That's how I view him, as an adult, as a responsible basketball player, as a guy who's not going to fuck around out there. And for a team who's trying to win a championship, the more of those guys you have, the better.
I 100% agree with you. He is not, you know, it is a small trade. It is a very small trade. But there's definitely games where Porzingis is missing. And Luke Kornet as a backup big just isn't doing it. I definitely think Xavier Tillman's going to be an improvement in that sense. But yeah, I mean, small trade, positive trade.
Exactly. To kind of wrap up that segment before we move off on to some smaller stuff, is there a team that kind of won the trade deadline for you, or was there a move that you really think is like an A++?
I think the team that people are going to be looking at for that is the Knicks. And I think that's fair, especially if you're including OG Anunoby as a part of the trades that they made. Not just everything that happened on the 8. You know, I think going from, I mean, adding OG Anunoby, Bojan Bogdanovic, and Alec Burks, and trading away guys who mostly didn't fit your team right, that's an unbelievable upgrade. To do it without sending out first-round picks is awesome. I think, again, just the Knicks deserve a lot of credit for what they did.
Yeah, that's definitely a winner for sure. I'm going to go with the Charlotte Hornets. I think finally choosing a direction and being sellers and getting a guy like Grant Williams, who I think is just as good as PJ Washington, plus Seth Curry, plus a lightly protected first-round pick is massive. And then I also think the same thing for Gordon Hayward, a guy who clearly didn't want to be there, didn't fit your culture, way past your timeline. And in return, you get a few second-round picks, a guy in Micic, who will actually play for you. And I just don't know how they could have cleaned up more. Miles Bridges, I want to talk about that quickly just before we moved off. He had a no-trade clause. I did not know that in his $7 million deal. I've never heard of that before. He waived that, so that's why he's still in Charlotte. But in terms of the assets they actually sent out, I think they got a very, very good return.
I think they did too, man. We had a conversation on the Big Picture pod that we did about, you know, is it worth it to make trades that don't put you into title contendership? And the thing that we were looking at was the OG Anunoby trade. And at the time, it definitely wasn't a massive needle mover. I think with all of the depth that they've added, you know, we saw why they did it. You should always be making deals like that, because maybe you are just one trade away and one potential injury from another team away from being the finals favorite yourself.
Exactly. And I think, you know, that lends itself to why OKC did what they just did with Gordon Hayward and stuff like that. We're seeing a lot of these moves to make teams better that may not guarantee them to be in the championship, but that's the whole point of the sport, right? Incrementally get better. Hopefully things fall your way. And I think even for Charlotte, like, I was happy with what they did, because they, one, chose a direction, but two, I think dead ass just got better. They managed to do both at the same time. They got better and got assets. So I'm giving Charlotte an A+.
I think Charlotte deserves an A+, definitely. Let's talk about just the insanity that was last night's Spurs game. Victor Wembanyama, in 28 minutes, put up 27 points, 14 rebounds, 10 blocks, and 5 assists, and he only missed 2 shots. I don't know, you know, we're kind of running out of words to say about Victor Wembanyama. It's hard to even place him. Like, you texted me about, maybe is he a top 10 player? Like, definitely he could be a top 15 player. I'm really struggling with the who would you rather, Wemby or this guy. There's so many names that I'm really, really struggling with recently.
You guys can go listen to this. This is like I said on a podcast with our friend Nate, I think 2 years ago, that I'd rather have Wembanyama than Joel Embiid before Wemby even got drafted. I'm starting to reach the point where it's really just Jokic and Giannis over Wembanyama. In terms of guys like who I want going forward, like heading into a game 7 today, I think you're starting to get to the point where it's like uncomfortable conversations have to happen. Now, we haven't seen him in playoff basketball, and we're probably pretty far away from that. But I think his one weakness at this point is turnovers. He turns the ball over like crazy. And it's because he's experimenting, and it's because he tries passes that other big men would not try. So that's fine, you know, as a young player. But I'm just, if you think of the fully formed player that is Victor Wembanyama in, let's say, 2 more years, I just don't know how you beat that guy.
This is like, you know, we had this conversation when I was talking about a men with you off pod. Like, these guys are, this is the worst version of these players. Victor Wembanyama, Chet Holmgren, Brandon Miller, all of these guys who are doing unbelievable shit as rookies, this is literally the worst version of them we're going to see. I'm struggling, man, to think of what it even looks like when Wemby reaches his apex. We've already hit the point, like, getting 10 blocks in a game is going to be more and more difficult for him, purely because guys do not want to shoot when he's around. We're seeing it already. There are guys who are just refusing to look at the basket when Victor Wembanyama is within 10 feet. To get a triple-double with blocks as a rookie, and, like, he is on quadruple-double watch already.
Yeah.
It's nuts, yeah. Man.
And, you know, you mentioned it, that getting 10 blocks again will be harder and harder every time he does it. There's a clip from last night's game that had me cackling laughing. Grady Dick went up for a layup, but because he could sense Wembanyama behind him, he airballed the layup. Just because he could feel it over his shoulder, yeah. He caught his own layup that he airballed, put it back up, and Wemby sent it. And I was just like, there's nothing you can do. There's nothing you can do. I think, you know, we talked pre-pod again, like, is he just, I told you, I'm having visions of him hoisting the Larry O'Brien after his, like, third or fourth season. That's kind of where I've gotten to in terms of, like, he is exactly the bill of goods we were sold before the draft, right? This generational, once in a life, that is who he is. And I think he may be our generation of LeBron. Because me and you, we were 3 years old when LeBron came into the league. We didn't get to really notice or enjoy the majority of his career. Wemby, we're going to get to see the entire picture when it's done. And I think in terms of, like, generational guys who have controlled their eras, it's who? It's Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, LeBron James. Like, there's a chance that Wemby puts himself in that conversation, which is just crazy.
One of the things you brought up off pod that is just a really important thing to talk about when we talk about Wembanyama and team building is just how easy it is to put players next to Wemby. Like, you know, we talked about it with Luka Doncic. He's a hard guy to build around because his usage is so high. He has the ball in his hands all the time. If you're bringing in more guys who want the ball in their hands, you know, there's only one basketball. You're going to struggle. Victor Wembanyama can do this on 30 touches in a game. Like, as long as you can get him an entry pass, which anybody can do because he's 7'12". So, like, it's unbelievable how easy it is to put players next to Wemby and watch this lead to positive team building. It should happen next year. Like, next, we should not wait. I don't care. Sure, we have the same thing going with LeBron and the Cavs, Luka and the Mavs. Like, hemorrhage your future so we can watch this team be a playoff team right now. I really want to see it.
Yeah, same. Even a play-in push, I would be super happy for. Yeah. He's just reached, like, kind of unfathomable levels. You know, I think this is the greatest rookie season me and you have been alive for. You know, I know LeBron was spectacular as a rookie, just in terms of kind of like eye-popping, oh my gosh, what's happening here? But there's a part of Victor's game that's just so clean already as a defender that just, even though he struggles with the same thing LeBron did as a rookie with efficiency and turnovers, he has that defensive component to kind of lie back on during his rookie season to say, like, this is the best rookie season since the 2000s. I think Wemby legitimately has that case.
I think he might, man. I think he might. You know, I hear conversations about him potentially challenging Derrick Rose as the youngest MVP ever. And it's really up to team success. Like, you know, next year he could put up the stat line. He's already, what is he at right now? 20 points, 10 boards, 3 assists, 3 blocks a game.
Yeah.
That's stupid. That is unbelievable from a rookie. And I think I say it every time, but, like, we haven't even hit March yet. We're about to get just, like, him playing against the worst competition in the NBA, and it's going to be even crazier.
And he's on a minutes restriction, folks. This is a guy who's playing 28 minutes a night, never more. So, you know, to think, like, all right, he gets an extra 4 minutes a game at some point in his career. What does that look like? Seriously, we're going to hit a point where it's like 27, 12, 5, and 4. It's like, that is just the best player in the league at that point, depending on what the efficiency looks like.
What do you think about the minutes restriction part of it? Obviously, he's no longer rehabbing an injury, and it's just the fact that the Spurs aren't competitive and they don't want to risk it. What do you think about it?
I think it's super smart. I haven't been a huge fan of anything Popovich has done this season, to be completely honest with you, but I think this was the one thing I'm in full support of. I think in France, Wemby only played 35 games before the playoffs starts there, and I think kind of in totality, it was around 40. Just the NBA regular season is 82, right? So to double your workload just with a summer break in between, I just think that would have been a little ridiculous. So I'm glad that the minutes restriction is there.
Isn't that what every single kid coming from college is doing?
Yes, but I think the injury stuff he dealt with is important because he did have like a lower, what was it, a lower back?
I thought it was like an ankle sprain, but I'm not sure.
Something. Yeah. Something. He had something weird at the beginning of last season, and it made me and you think like, oh boy,
lower
is
back.
There...
That was a lower back.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm fine with all precautions when it comes to Wemby, especially in this season that is just a dumpster fire, right? I mean, they have no talent on this team outside of Sohan and Wemby and Vassell. He's okay too, but outside of those three guys, I mean, I'm not so sure how many players on this roster are a part of their future.
Yeah, and Sohan's just our guy. Like, I don't think other people are rating Sohan as a guy who's like a must keep.
I think the way he kind of sets the tone and fits on the team, actually, I mean, he's 11-6-4 right now.
It just feels like the chemistry with him and Wembanyama is terrible.
As point guard center, yes, but as power forward center, they've played very well together. So it's something to keep an eye on for sure. But yeah, I'm with you, Ben. I think in terms of team building, I know we've kind of poo-pooed the LeBron James and the Luka team building styles earlier on in this pod. Why are we waiting with Wemby? I mean, seriously, if there is a star like Trae Young who enters the, you know, trade bonanza during the summer, you need to mortgage your future to go get that guy. You need to trade Devin Vassell and Keldon Johnson plus three first round picks to go get him. Seriously.
Those two guys plus a bunch of scrubs would be enough to make some noise. They're not, it doesn't put him into title contention. They definitely would need some legit depth. But just those two guys, they're entertaining and they're a play-in team at the least.
Yeah. And I remember saying this during the draft season, but I made a joke like the Spurs should trade all of their first round picks in the future to go get Scoot Henderson, like the third overall pick, and just say, Wemby and Scoot, you're our team for the next 15 years. And like, we'll try to build around you on the fringes. I still kind of subscribe to that, where it's like, if there's a young point guard out there that hits the market, do everything in your power to bring that dude in, whether it's Trae Young, whether it's DeJounte, whether it's Anfernee Simons, whoever it is, bring that dude in.
I agree. I think that would be a must do for them. I want to see it next season. I want to pivot and talk about our final thing for this episode. The Warriors look good again. And with that, Steph Curry is back to Steph Curry. There was a slump there. I think it's probably pretty much directly tied to Draymond's suspension, where in the games that Draymond was out, Steph Curry was averaging like 24 points a game on bad shooting splits, and he is right back to the player that he was. I don't know why I was so down on him. I really thought it was like an age thing catching up to him, but the difference that Draymond makes when you add him to this lineup is so stark.
Quick pat on my back. Me and you have debated over Draymond for years, but he's super important. And I think something you've always actually been right about is I think he did cross the line. And I think this season it got to a point where it's like, all right, now we're just being dangerous. And that made me super uncomfy. And I'm glad the suspension came in the way it did, because I was always in support of the way Draymond behaved, which sounds stupid, but I think there are guys that you kind of need to shake things up. Right, especially when you have a docile superstar on your team. Like, Steph's never going to get chest to chest with another player and start like defending himself, right? That's just not the kind of character he is. So to have basically a hitman on your team who will never let your star be like punked or like stepped on, I always thought was like wildly important. But now we're starting to see that still in play, but just not dangerous, which is what it should be in the first place, right? I don't see violent plays out on the basketball court where I think, oh boy, like, is Nurkic's nose going to be broken for a month and a half? Or like, oh, Sabonis's chest, like, are his ribs okay? there's less of that, basically zero of it, actually. So if you can have the guy who's willing to stick up for his star, but not the dangerous, crazy, like, wild plays, Draymond's an all-defense caliber guy, and that's going to help his team a ton.
I think to start from the suspension, I'm not sure if he got a technical or a flagrant in the Phoenix game.
He did. He got a tech, but he was arguing over a foul call. He wasn't like beefing with someone.
And that's what he does. But before that, we had a 10-game stretch with zero flagrant fouls and zero technicals from Draymond Green. How many of those have we had across his entire career? I bet I could count them on one hand. Right. So we're definitely seeing a version of him that is at least like got his shit together a little bit. He was out of control in the beginning. I think it's only a matter of time. I don't think Draymond Green is a changed man. I don't think he's seen the light. I think he just didn't want to get in trouble again. And I think if we go 20 games without a major issue, then he could kind of go back to being Draymond Green.
I think that's fair, considering his history. I definitely think that's fair. I'm going to go on the other side. And if he makes me look stupid, that's fine. If he has some massive blow up where he's punching people and shit, I'll just take the L on this. But I think when he was out, it was less of a, I'm going to change as a human being, and more of a, when I'm out, my team sucks, and we don't have a shot to win the championship when I'm out. So if I do this again, I'm costing my team everything. I'm kind of going to lean on that side and just hope he can kind of keep his composure. Like I said, there's definitely a chance he proves me to look like an idiot. There definitely is. But I'm just going to err on that side.
You know, man, I think the Warriors are on the same side. I think they are riding with the crazy guy, and they're hoping that it all works out. Obviously, the Warriors look night and day different with Draymond Green back on the team. An interesting wrinkle that I think we're certain is not going to solve itself: Klay Thompson is washed.
Yeah.
He is done being a starter. Starter, whatever. He's done closing out lineups, probably for good.
Yeah. It's been an odd few weeks of media coverage of Klay Thompson, because at the beginning of the season, he was super combative and rude when these conversations were happening. And we have seen some like self-acceptance over these last few weeks. And it's kind of like eerie to watch, where it's like,
he doesn't want any of this shit.
Yeah. It's just like, people know that he's washed, and now he knows he's washed. And it's like a really weird thing to watch in real time. A player kind of defiantly say, no, fuck you, I'm one of the best players in the world, to realizing, like, brother, you're not like a top 7 player on your team. That's a really weird thing to kind of watch happen in real time. He came out in the media just recently and said he would be willing to take a lesser contract to stay on the Warriors and retire there. I think if you're Warriors management, you are like throwing a parade after hearing him say that, because you want him to retire a Warrior, but you don't want him making $45 million a year for being a bum. So it's the perfect medium.
Do they even care if he retires a Warrior?
They do.
Why?
They're going to build a statue of him outside, bro. They care.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I think it's definitely possible. I think the NBA is far more of a business than that. I think Steph Curry is a guy that they absolutely would do anything for forever. But I think Klay Thompson, if they could get value for him, he may not retire a Warrior.
And that's the thing. There is no value for him, right? So, like, there's not a single other team in the league who would want to trade for him right now. And I think if you're the Warriors and he's telling you, hey, guys, I will play for you, and you only have to pay me $16 million over the next 4 years and just match me up with Curry and Draymond's contracts, like, that is perfect. They all ride into the sunset together, and like, the statue will be erected by the time they're retired, and hopefully they can win one more title as a trio.
I think we've kind of found out that of the three of those guys, Klay is the most replaceable.
Easily.
So I wouldn't be surprised if they don't give him a 4-year deal, because they know nobody else is going to. You want 2 years? You know, we'll see what you're like after that. I don't know, man. Yeah. I think Steph and Draymond are clearly the guys that they have tied their wagon to. I think Klay is kind of expendable.
He is. He is, in terms of basketball talent. In terms of emotional like connection, I don't think that's a guy you can just throw out to the street. And I also think, like, yes, he's the point of his career he's at right now is, if he doesn't hit his shots, he's completely useless, mm-hmm. right? That that is exactly what he is as a basketball player. That guy still matters off the bench, believe it or not. So, like, a guy who can't defend, can't play make, can't rebound, can't anything other than score, that player still impacts winning off the bench in limited minutes. Like, if Klay goes 3-for-4 from 3 in 17 minutes, that still means something. But, like, the role reduction needs to be pretty apparent. And we're seeing that right now with Pods and Kuminga and even Lester Quinones or whatever the fuck his name is. Like, just random dudes popping out and playing better than Klay Thompson. It's pretty crazy.
And to see his mood just get worse and worse and worse as he sits on the bench as the weeks go on. It's sad, man. It's such a bummer. Because the thing is, like, now that Draymond's back, the feelings around the Warriors have shifted a little bit. Like, this is going to be a team that's trying for something in the playoffs. And we're going to get to the playoffs, and Klay Thompson's just going to sit in the sidelines and watch. That's such a big fucking bummer, man. I don't know. Like, I think I would struggle with that role. I think I would struggle to come back to that team. But if they're going to pay him $16 million a year to just be a dude clapping really loud on the bench, I would be okay with that. I'd take that.
Yeah. Another thing we need to talk about the Warriors is Jonathan Kuminga. There, earlier on in the season, he openly complained about Steve Kerr not playing him more minutes and how he felt like he could bring something to the team. He was right.
Yes.
And I don't think we've ever seen a player complaining work this well before. He complained, he got put in the starting lineup, and now he's averaging like 24 points over the last like 12 games he's played or something. Like, he has been really fucking good. What have your thoughts been on Kuminga kind of leveling up out of nowhere here?
I think he was 100% right to say what he did. I think some coaches absolutely ruin the futures of the players that they coach. I think we've seen it countless times, uncountable amount of times over the years, where guys who could obviously do more if they were given a bigger role just never get the opportunity. And then they become a guy who that is their thing. They're just a career role player and they can never bust out of that. We had high expectations for Jonathan Kuminga when he got drafted. This man is a freakish athlete. He's strong as shit. He's got long arms. He's 6'8". Like, this could be a really, really important wing for your playoff rotation, for any team. I'm glad he's getting the run he's got, man. I don't think he's alone. I think there are so many guys in this league that if their coaches only played them more minutes and gave them more opportunity, they'd be doing shit like this too.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think this is one of those weird things where opportunity, you need to be given it. Sometimes you can't earn it. Like, Kerr kept him on the bench in favor of Kuminga and Klay and Wiggins over Kuminga for like 25 games straight, even though both of those players were having the worst seasons of their careers. Correct. This is a stat that our friends at NBA University on Twitter has out. Over the last 15 games, 21-year-old Jonathan Kuminga is fourth in the NBA at field goals made at the rim, leading the NBA in field goal percentage at the rim at 78%. That's what you get when you have a 225-pound man who's 6'8", barreling at the rim at full speed with 99% athleticism. Like, it's just going to work. We've seen it over the course of NBA history. Guys built like that, with that athleticism, heading to the rim equals easy points. So I'm glad Kerr has kind of changed his philosophy there.
He needed to, man. Without making that change, like, the Warriors are still poverty team. Like, Steph Curry cannot single-handedly carry this team to an 8 seed. They need more help. Wiggins is not doing it. Klay is not doing it. Kuminga has been begging to just be impactful for this team and play minutes. And finally, he's gotten the chance, man. I'm happy to see it. I wonder where it goes. We kind of had some thoughts when he got drafted about, is this a guy who could make an All-Star game? Like, one in his career? And his early seasons told us definitely no. But what we're seeing from him here is, like, if Wiggins and Klay were off the team, he could be a guy scoring 20 points a game for the season.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it also, like, really helps Warriors fan picture a world without Steph Curry, Klay, and Draymond, right? Where you at least have someone to be thankful for in terms of a young talent on your team, especially after the misses of James Wiseman and Moses Moody, right? So you have one guy you can kind of tie your wagon to moving forward.
And now I'm kind of at the point where it's like, is Steve Kerr ruining Moses Moody too? We saw some excellent play from him in the summer league. I loved that draft when it happened. Trace Jackson Davis was an excellent pick. He's playing 13 minutes a game, and I've loved him in the games where they give him serious run. Like, is Steve Kerr just kind of screwing things up right now?
I would lean no, just because he's given so much grace to Pods as a rookie, and Trace Jackson Davis is getting his opportunity as well. I just think the spot of Clay and Wiggins was so weird to break because they were ingrained in that championship team as important pieces. But I'm glad he kind of gave up on them. And I think Moses Moody is just a miss. Like, I don't think we're going to see him somewhere else and be like, oh, we were waiting for this, which is fine. You know, he was the 14th pick in the draft. There were players there that they could have chosen, like Şengün. But everything's fine. I think the Warriors are starting to pick it back up. And I think this summer can turn them back into a title contender, because they have Chris Paul coming off the books. They have Klay Thompson dropping in salary by at least half. I think that's massively important. You know, can they package Wiggins and picks to get something? Maybe. There are ways they can kind of turn this around, which I'm happy to see.
Yeah, it starts with moving Wiggins. Absolutely, that's where it starts. They've got a team option on Jonathan Kuminga, which is awesome. Pods is locked up on his rookie deal. So they've got some important players on cheap deals. But then they've got to deal with the 20-something million a year that they're shipping out to Andrew Wiggins. Klay Thompson, it's so interesting, man. If basketball was just a business, I would say get Klay Thompson the hell out of Golden State. Like, he is not worth $16 million. He's not worth $12 million. He'd be worth riding the bench on another team. But I think they're going to pay him. So they do. They need, like, another $10 to $15 million guy that they can kind of help bring some impact. I don't know where that guy is, though.
So Klay is shooting 37% from three right now on 8 attempts a game. What do you think that's worth in the NBA today?
It's an interesting question, man. That alone, you know, good shooting, really efficient shooting is valuable. But when, you know, it's when it's like a Trae Young situation where you give up points for every point that you score, it's kind of a wash. And when you look at Klay Thompson's on-off numbers, the Warriors are 9 points worse per 100 possessions with him on the floor. So that tells me that that 37% means pretty much nothing.
I think that's a fair argument. I think it's still the hardest or the most important skill set in the league right 100%. Now. And I think if we're just talking about, you know, free agent who shoots 37% from three, you can get him for $12 to $16 million a year. I think most teams do that. I think what sucks is Klay Thompson is literally horrible at everything else in basketball. He can't dribble, he can't drive, he can't play defense, he can't pass, he can't rebound. He literally, the only skill set he has is catch and shoot threes. That is tough. That I'm not sure a team, because George Niang's the same way, but George Niang's getting paid $9 million, right? So I think the name recognition kind of inflates Klay's value on the market a little
Absolutely.
Bit.
Absolutely.
But if he can make an agreement with the Warriors, hey, pay me 10, you just have to do that, because 37% from three on 9 attempts a game is good enough where you need to keep that on your roster at that price.
I think you're right about that. He was asking for what, $40 million a year when the season started?
Yeah.
What a fall from grace, man.
Yeah,
I think if you could get him at around $12 million, that would be unbelievable. Because there are guys getting paid $12 million a year who don't do anything for a lot of teams. Evan Fournier is getting paid $17 million a year. If you could pay him less than Evan Fournier, I think, get him on that deal.
Right. So, yeah, I think the Warriors are in good shape for next season. I still think they're a fake contender this year. I'm glad that Kuminga's taking the steps to kind of improve himself and look like a real rotational piece for them heading forward. But, yeah, they have some questions to answer come the summertime.
Yeah, man. Before we wrap this up, it wasn't a part of the pod, but I do just kind of want to talk about the game that happened last night between the Timberwolves and the Clippers. We have had plenty of questions. I specifically have had plenty of questions about their offense. I mean, about what does this Timberwolves team even look like when Anthony Edwards is not scoring all the time? And he had 6 points in the first half, and they ended the half with the lead, and they won the game really convincingly. Do you have any thoughts about this game from either team's perspective? Is there anything kind of noteworthy about it?
So I only got to watch the first quarter of this one, but in terms of the Clippers, that I've noticed a slight drop off these last few games. I think their wins have looked harder, and I think their losses have looked worse. I think this is a case of your team's pretty old and you're begging for that all-star break. I think giving these guys a week to rest their knees, kind of just enjoy life a little bit, they'll be fine once the all-star break is over. In terms of the Timberwolves, I think it's really hard to beat the Timberwolves when Ant only has one turnover. This dude is very turnover prone. So is Karl Anthony Towns. Both of them combined had two turnovers on the night. When the guys that are touching the ball the most out of anyone on your team only have two turnovers, they're pretty impossible to beat. That's how I view them, at least.
At the same time, those guys combined for two turnovers, they combined for two made threes on 16 attempts. Yeah. So there was some ugliness in there, too. Yeah. I really thought this stinker from Anthony Edwards was going to carry them down, was going to kind of drag them to a loss. But everybody else just kept scoring around them. And then the Clippers just really kept struggling to find buckets. I think that's a totally fair assessment that these are just old men that are tired. The All-Star break is coming up. These are all old guys, and these are all old guys who are not used to playing every single game of the season. So I think that's fair.
Yeah, Harden, Paul George, and Westbrook were all horrible last night. I mean, if you just look at their stats, Paul George 5-for-16, James Harden 5-for-13, Westbrook 3-for-11. Like, those shooting numbers are not going to lead you to a win. Kawhi was okay, 8-of-17 with 18 points. Like, that's just like a ho-hum kind of mail-it-in performance from Kawhi. Yeah. So, that should have been a really fun game to watch, but it kind of wasn't. Yeah,
that was my feelings about it. I was expecting it to be a really entertaining game, and then it was just bad scoring and a Timberwolves blowout.
Right, which is like not what we're tuning in for.
No.
I think that covers about everything. I don't know if we have any huge picture stuff to talk about before we go. I think we're good. Do you have anything else to say, Ben, or do you think you're all
set? That's going
to
do it for me. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll catch you later. Peace.
Peace.